be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. I'm Max Brown, along with my colleague and friend, Roy Saunderson, and of course, we're from Rideau's Recognition Management Institute. Roy, a very interesting show for today.
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to be very curious to know how we take the angle that we're going to with our guests, because sometimes leadership is tough.
It is tough. And I think sometimes we deny, you know, or we think that when there are problems and the challenges, that somehow that's something to avoid, or that that's the bad part.
Yep, just take these three steps and you'll be a leader, right?
Right. And today our guest, Stephen Snyder, is talking about how this art of struggle, and specifically his title, The Leadership and the Art of Struggle, from his book, talking about how this is actually could be a strength for us. Let me give you some background on him. He's the founder of the Twin Cities-based Snyder Leadership Group, and he's established it to provide a resource for organizations and their executives to advance their leadership capabilities and achieve greater success. He's an innovator in thought leadership, and he developed the breakthrough concepts introduced in The Leadership and the Art of Struggle based on years of studies and research and data derived from extensive interviews with real world executives from a lot of major corporations. His advancements in the practice of leadership also derive from his own leadership experiences. He was, in fact, an early leader at Microsoft, where he worked closely with Bill Gates, as well as experience as a CEO of a publicly held company. And, of course, he has all kinds of degrees, whether it be doctorate or MBAs and all kinds of great schools like Harvard. And I mean, just, Stephen, a wealth of experience. We're really grateful you could be on the show today.
Well, thanks so much, Max. It's a pleasure to be here.
We are grateful. And I really enjoyed what you said about leadership and specifically the challenges that we will face, and instead of avoiding them, embracing them. And maybe I'm sure you can articulate it better than I ever will. So what do you think the leadership and the art of struggle is all about?
Well, as you said before, we all know that leadership can be a struggle sometimes. It's really, really hard.
Yeah.
And the problem is that we've been brainwashed by society. That there are strong cultural stigmas that cast struggle in a negative light. And as a result, that when we're facing difficult times, we feel, you know, embarrassed or ashamed or even deny that it's happening. We think
mm-hmm.
that we are alone.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Everybody struggles. And when we cast aside those stigmas, we free ourselves to look at struggle from an entirely new light. You know, instead of running away from it, we begin to embrace it as an art to be mastered. And that's when we open up the whole new set of possibilities for our growth and development. You know, I saw that early on when I worked with Bill Gates back in the 1980s. And then when I was the CEO of my own company, you know, all of that became clear to me. And now, by examining these 151 episodes of struggle from my research, it becomes really clear that there is a well-proven path of how to navigate through these difficult times. And that's what the book is all about. It's practical advice as to how do you get through it.
And I enjoyed that, actually. There are some tremendous stories, as you just mentioned, as well, throughout the book. And we're going to get into a couple of those stories as well, which I find very intriguing. But I want to ask you, how do we get past this view of challenges as a negative and view them as an asset?
Well, you know, that's the bit that has to flip in our brain. And once we do that, we engage in what I call a growth mindset. Because the reality of this is what I found from interviewing these great leaders is that they viewed the challenges as a learning opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And when we see this not as a negative, not as something bad, but rather an opportunity for learning, that's when we can take advantage of it. That's when we begin to engage these mastery practices that I talk about in the book. And so, you know, the bit that flips in our brain is to say, no, it's not bad. This is an opportunity for learning and growth. And once that happens, then an entirely new mindset appears, this growth mindset that I talk about in the book.
And it's interesting because I enjoyed a quote that Bill George wrote in the foreword of the book. I quote it because I want to challenge the premise here a little bit, maybe for a listener who's thinking, you know, I know this is the right thing. I know Stephen's saying the right thing here, but how do I do it? Bill George said this. He said, in refusing to acknowledge their roles in contributing to the problems around them, many leaders repeat their mistakes rather than learn from them. They may move to another job without ever facing themselves, thinking a fresh start will obviate their difficulties and we can change the venue, but our shortcomings are with us until we acknowledge them to ourselves as well as to others. And this is really the premise of your book, isn't it? That we have to not only think that we can just keep walking away from our problems, but that we have to face them. But isn't that easier said than done?
It's so much the truth. It is very hard to do. There's no question about that. But the key to it all is humility.
Mm.
You know what? Nobody is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
We're all human beings. And if we just give ourselves a break and recognizing that, you know, nobody is perfect and have a little bit of humility, then that then opens up all of the opportunities for looking at yourself in an entirely different light. You know, the part of this myth that I was talking about before, these cultural stereotypes, is that they convince us that there's such a thing as a perfect leader.
Mm-hmm.
But we know in our gut the basic truth that nobody is perfect. You know, I worked very, very closely with Bill Gates, and we, you know, all admire Bill. I mean, Bill is such an incredible individual, but he's a human being just like all of us. And sometimes we forget that. And, you know, when we look at ourselves as a human being and we deal with kindness and compassion to ourselves and approach life with humility, you know, everything changes because we then begin to approach others with humility as well, and we show respect for them and for their dignity, and then we get into conversations that we otherwise wouldn't have.
Yeah. I love that you use humility as the framework for this, and as Roy well knows, this is a favorite topic of mine as well, so I'm grateful you've started with that. It's such a wonderful way to do it. And I love the definition you shared, and you attribute it to a former classmate who's a professor at Harvard now, and he had helped his class evolve to a new definition of leadership. And I really like that definition. Could you share it with us and maybe describe what it means? I like how you parsed it actually in the book as well. It is very powerful.
Yeah. Well, first let me provide the context. This is Joe Badaracco, who taught a class at the Harvard Business School. He's now a professor and actually the senior associate dean of the Harvard Business School. And he taught a class looking at leadership through the lens of literature. So in the class, instead of using the normal case studies, they used works of literature, you know, works like Death of a Salesman or Things Fall Apart or A Man for All Seasons. And so they approached leadership from an entirely different lens, guided by the wisdom of literature. And through that, Joe came up with this 23-word concept. I wouldn't call it a definition necessarily, but rather a lens.
Okay.
A new lens that we can look at leadership through, a new concept or a new model of leadership. He said, leadership is a struggle by flawed human beings to make some important human values real and effective in the world as it is. Now, you know, some people may immediately resonate to that. They may say, aha, you know, finally I've seen the light. This is this new way of thinking about leadership. But I realize that others may be initially reluctant or might find it off-putting. But the important thing is that it engages us in a new conversation about leadership. And when we open ourselves up to looking at leadership through this new lens, whether we initially agree with this concept or model or not, we then begin to see and peer into leadership through this lens. We begin to see a whole new vocabulary for thinking about leadership. A new set of tools emerge, and these all emerge by the research that I did when I asked real world leaders. These were not fictional characters that Joe studied, but rather engaged real world leaders in this conversation. Tell me about the time that you struggled the most, your most intense, riveting challenge. Tell me about that time. What is your story? And that those stories bring to life this struggle lens. They bring to life not only the reality that leadership is a struggle, and yes, all human beings are flawed, but it's this striving to make these important human values real and effective. What are the values? Because so often in leadership, we're blindly striving to reach these goals. You know, we're going 90 miles an hour to reach the goals, and we don't think about what are the underlying values. That we're on automatic pilot. And when we think about the values separately, we can begin to tease apart these potentially disconnects. We can say maybe the goals aren't right. Maybe we need to have a conversation about them. Maybe we should engage a conversation with someone who we used to call our enemy, but now see them as a colleague, as a fellow struggling, flawed human being, just like ourselves, and when we treat them with dignity and respect, we can understand that they are striving to actualize a different set of human values. And maybe when we have a conversation about that, we can tease apart the nuances and find some common ground. And again, this concept opens a whole new conversation about leadership, and that's what's so exciting about what Joe had done.
It's fantastic, and I'm enjoying it because it does create a new lens to look at these things, and I like, you know, the premise, hey, we are flawed, we will make mistakes, let's get over it, don't try to hide it, don't try to, you know, be more than you are, and as a premise of all this, we talked about the humility aspect, that includes what you talk about, meaning we have to be more self-aware. We have to take a quick break, however, so when we come back, let's continue this conversation. Let's dig deeper into it and how we can start to unravel or unwrap some of this and be more effective as leaders. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Awesome. Let's take a quick break. This is Max Brown and Roy Saunderson with our guest today, Stephen Snyder. And you're listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at RIDEAU.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about: getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. I'm Roy Saunderson, along with my colleague and friend Max Brown, and our guest today, Stephen Snyder. And Stephen, you were talking about in your research about, you know, gaining a lot of insights and stories from people. Is there a particular leader who stands out for you as you've learned about leadership and struggling and the flaws that we go through?
Yeah, you know, the one that stands out the most is Steve Jobs. I didn't know Steve, and you know, at Microsoft I worked very closely with Bill, but through the Isaacson biography, really got to know Steve. And when we look at Steve Jobs through the struggle lens, through that lens that we were talking about earlier, we see a whole different reconstruct a narrative in a way that I think really is helpful to understand and appreciate his growth as a leader. Now let me say at the outset that Steve Jobs, like everyone else, is a flawed human being, or was a flawed human being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody is perfect. But the thing about Steve Jobs, and this is what's remarkable, is that he had a very, very intense and embarrassing failure. He burnt out the first time of that he was at Apple, and he progresses down a script that I found in many situations in my interviews. I call it the burnout script. That's where you have such a distorted view of reality. You know, Steve used to talk about the reality distortion field. Well, this distortion field was so distorted, he had no understanding of reality. And as a result, he made major miscalculations that when you look at it, were absolutely so perverse. They worked to undermine him. They worked to go exactly against the aims that he thought he was trying to achieve. And, you know, what happens in the burnout script is your relationships deteriorate, the energy drains out of us, we become exhausted, everyone else around us become exhausted, and ultimately, as the script progresses, we become either leave or fired. And essentially, that's what happened to Steve Jobs. And with Steve, this was a spectacular failure, because Steve had created this company. He was the founder.
Right.
So this was a huge embarrassment. But what he did was he learned from this tremendous, tremendous failure. And when he came back to Apple, he came back with a very, very different mindset. He went through this reinvention process. And it was through this reinvention process that I've seen occur in many, many other leaders as well that I had a chance to interview, that actually is the remarkable story, where they emerge better and stronger leaders because of their past experiences. They learn from their past experiences. They don't make the same mistakes that they did in the past. And as a result, they're able to reach their full leadership potential, and the world is better off from it, because we have the benefits of their creativity and their leadership. And we see this most dramatically with Steve Jobs, but there are many other stories in the book. I talk about the artistic director of the Guthrie Theater here in Minneapolis, who went through the same metamorphosis from when he was a young artistic director at the Abbey Theater in the National Theater of Ireland to how he reinvented himself as a leader here at the Guthrie, just changing his leadership style, allowing all of the talents to come to life. And there's one very important commonality in all of these stories of reinvention, and that is the move from the self-centered, egotistical I into a more collaborative and inclusive we.
Mm.
And we see this with Steve Jobs as how he formed partnerships, key alliances with key members of Apple. And they would work to brainstorm. You know, the stories of Johnny Ives, for example, the design director who was really the genius around a lot of Apple design. You know, he said in the Steve Jobs Memorial how collaborative Steve was on a one-on-one basis. Now, we think of Steve Jobs as this egotistical, you know, individual, but really, through the partnerships, he was very, very collaborative. And that's this metamorphosis, moving from the I can do it, everybody else just get out of my way because mm-hmm. I know better than everybody else, into this inclusive we that says, we, when we look together, when we explore together, when we discover together, we can create something that's much more powerful than any one person can. And that's really the story of leadership that's proven time and time again.
Well, you've talked about Steve Jobs kind of reinventing himself from a mindset point of view, and in your book you talk about growth mindsets, which you've alluded to earlier with Max. What is a growth mindset? And I know you also talk about fixed mindsets. What's the difference between them?
Yeah, this is based on some very interesting psychological research done by Carol Dweck. Her experiments have been phenomenally interesting. She studied people who have fixed mindsets. That is, they believe that their capabilities and talents are essentially fixed, that they're inherent and innate within them. And she studied other individuals who have a growth mindset, that really believe that their capabilities are not fixed, but rather subject to change and to growth. And it turns out that one very basic assumption makes so much difference. If you have a growth mindset, if you believe that your capabilities are not fixed, but rather subject to growth and development, then you perform better, you learn from feedback better, and you actually turn into a more effective and capable human beings. You know, and one of my former colleagues at Microsoft, Frank Audette, who is the CFO there, said it best. He said, "I reserve the right to wake up smarter each and every day." And if we have that mindset that we don't know it all today, but tomorrow we're going to learn a little bit more, what a difference that makes. And this is proven psychologically through the experiments that Carol Dweck did. They're very, very compelling scientific research, but really is borne out by my research through the stories as well. When you flip that bit in your brain that says, you know, it's all about growth. It's not about, you know, what you got today, but rather the learning and growth that can come tomorrow. Then that's when the real magic starts happening.
Right. Now, you've gone through your own learning curve from losing your job, and how did that turn you around to learn? And
oh, my goodness. Talk about struggles. Well, you know, I talk about all of the things that I found through the stories in my book. I mean, I went through them. my goodness, was I embarrassed. You know, the company I was, I had just moved from a very comfortable consulting job to a startup company in Boston, and that company just went under, and it failed, and I was literally at my low point. I mean, you know, I was, you know, questioning everything. You know, it was so embarrassing. I felt so ashamed. I felt so alone that, you know, all the world was just swirling and really caving in around me. But fortunately, you know, as I write in the book, I stayed in the dance, and you know, I was inspired by this Dan Fogelson song about the Kentucky Derby, and that inspired me to just stay in the dance. And lo and behold, in my lowest of moments, I saw a sign on a billboard at Baker Library at the Harvard Business School. I saw a notice that Bill Gates was coming to town. Mm. And you know, I knew the drill. I was a 5 years ago had graduated from the Harvard Business School, and so I knew exactly what to do. I knew Bill would give a talk, and then there would be a reception to follow. And you know, here I was feeling really, really depressed, but I attended the talk, and you know, there weren't a lot of people there. There was the room wasn't even full. This was 1983 when nobody really knew about Bill Gates. Okay. And then at the reception, I went up to him and I, you know, introduced myself, and lo and behold, I was the only one they hired from that recruiting trip.
Mm.
Forever known at Microsoft as the walk-on. But you know what? Had I not stayed in the dance, then I would have just crawled into my own corner and retreated. But really, what that taught me, and I think is a lesson that all leaders can learn, is that when you have a setback or a failure, it's all about resilience. It's all about really picking yourself up, dusting yourself off, and staying in the dance. You know, or maybe choosing a new dance. But the point is, you gotta get back. You gotta be resilient, and you learn how that you can overcome these failures, because once you've had the doozy of all doozies, but you pretty much can handle anything. And that's what I found. This was a doozy, and it really taught me how to handle pretty much anything.
I can agree with you with my own business failure. It's like when you've hit the lowest of lows, you've got nowhere else to go but up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you handled it well, and look at the wonderful results that occurred. How do we manage the whole stress of this more effectively? I mean, there's probably more stress today than ever before.
Yeah, you know, that is so important, and there's so much scientific research that has been done recently on new emerging approaches. Actually, this one is an old approach of meditation. There's this practice which one of the leaders I interviewed engaged in called mindfulness. And it's when you still and quiet your mind and body through meditation and yoga and other contemplative exercises and practices. And, you know, I was the last person anyone would have ever picked to be a meditator. I mean, you know, I just used to poo-poo it. What the heck? You know, this is all mumbo jumbo. But after I learned about this person's experience, I delved into it more. I took a course on mindfulness-based stress reduction that was given by our university here, the University of Minnesota, and this course is available in most universities throughout the United States. And I experientially experienced this new practice. I felt what it meant for me and how I felt. And I literally, I write in the book, it's a new operating system for your brain. Your brain reboots and it develops new capabilities. And I've learned by studying the scientific research that the scientific research about meditation is very, very compelling. Literally, Richie Davidson has studied brain chemistry and has learned that through a practice of just this 30 minutes a day for 8 weeks can literally change your brain chemistry in two areas. The first is in the left prefrontal cortex, which is it gives you happiness and pleasure. It's positive affect. And the other, the amygdala, which is where you experience stress. and it increases the positive affect, strengthens those neural pathways, and diminishes and decreases the amygdala. And so you change the way your brain chemistry works just by what you're doing, this practice. And now I practice for 8 minutes a day. That's all I need on an ongoing basis. And it is just it's just so powerful. You know, Bill George, who's been my mentor and wrote the foreword in the book, as you mentioned, practices meditation. He does it twice a day for 20 minutes. Now, I realize that meditation may not be right for everybody, and there are many, many pathways for this. There's exercise, there's gardening, being with nature, there's prayer, there's reflection through a journal, there's gaining support by conversations with others. I mean, there are so many pathways that I talk about in the book. The important thing is we've got to pay attention and take the time to remind ourselves to still and center our mind, our body, and spirit. And then when we do that, we connect with a number of other pathways. And then we can engage in the day in a very different way, because when stress happens, our normal stress reaction, most human beings go into the stress reaction of this automatic knee-jerk reaction. They get angry or lash out or they may get depressed or whatever, or they may experience physical symptoms. But what this teaches us is we train our mind to take a step back, to pause, to breathe, and look at ourselves as if we're looking down at ourselves from the balcony. And this is the reflective mind that I talk about in the book. Mm-hmm. And when we train our reflective mind to do that, we can eliminate or reduce the stress, and we can really change the way we approach our daily life. And it really improves how we function so much more. Again, we're thinking not of this thing which we used to think of, struggle, as a negative, but really embracing it as an art to be mastered, engaging with this growth mindset. And we're really energized. All of our energy becomes channeled in how do we navigate creatively and energetically through this challenging situation. We engage in this thing, this quality. We tap into this quality that I believe is inherent within all of us. It's our adaptive energy. And that's what I talked about when I talked about Steve Jobs, when I talked about Joe Dowling. All of the stories in the book really center around each individual tapping into their own adaptive energy, finding new adaptive energy to help them navigate through their difficult situation.
Well, Stephen, that's certainly very insightful for us to be able to look at this whole concept of leadership and the art of struggle. We're due for another break, so we're going to ask our listeners to join us back in a few more minutes on Rideau's Real Recognition Radio as we continue our conversation with Stephen Snyder. For Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, I'm Roy Sonneson, along with Max Brown.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and myself, Max Brown. And, of course, our guest today is Stephen Snyder. Stephen, in that last segment with Roy, you talked a lot about, you know, we do get burned out. And I like this burnout script you wrote about in the book. And more importantly, how do we heal from these things? Why do we have so many people walking around wounded, if you will, and some with some real wounds that are just revealed for a long, long period of time, maybe unnecessary suffering?
Yeah, you know, that really touches on what I think is so important about this this art of struggle and recognizing that sometimes things happen that we need some healing. And, you know, the burnout script, as I mentioned, you know, this was Steve Jobs' script and Joe Dowling. I talk about in the book in very great detail about his burnout. It's when all of the energy drains out of us. We become exhausted. Our relationships deteriorate. Everybody else is exhausted, and we wind up either leaving or are fired. And the thing about it is that this leaves pain and anguish for so long of a period of time. You know, when I interviewed Joe Dowling, I could feel the anguish in his voice, even though the situation that he told me about at the Abbey Theater was 30 years earlier. I could still hear the pain and anguish in his voice. And so often we leave that pain within us, and it dwells on us, and it actually continues to fester. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are so many pathways to really heal ourselves from that pain, from that anguish. One thing is just talking about it. You know, just the very process of telling your story is healing in and of itself. You know, when you share your story of pain and suffering to someone else, the burden just lifts. You know, you become cleansed. And so just talking about it really is a helpful thing. Also, as we were talking about before, this process of meditation, there's some special types of meditation called the loving kindness meditation that really focus on healing these wounds, and that's another pathway for healing. Many people find healing through religious practice or mm-hmm. through spiritual cleansing and renewal, or being with nature, and tapping into their spiritual being. There are so many ways to heal. But the most important thing is to find something a path that works for you. But you got to recognize that it's there within you, and you know that because you see it coming out in anger or maybe depression or self-doubt. You feel, if you pay attention through this reflective mind that I talk about in the book, when you pay attention to this and are aware of it, you realize that that's an old tape that's happening. It's your old tapes are playing again. And you've got to recognize that those are old tapes, and you've got to do something. When you pay attention to them, you've got to do something about them. You've got to go through this healing process that I described. There's one story in the book that where this person was engaged in a very destructive conflict situation, and she transcended the conflict by recognizing that it was her old tapes that were playing, and she healed herself and therefore was able to find a new creative solution that was able to transcend the conflict in her struggle. And when we do that, when we heal ourselves, then we're more present for others. We can become more compassionate, more empathetic. We can understand that other people are, like us, struggling human beings.
Sure.
And we can have empathy. And when we have empathy, when we have compassion, boy, there's no telling how many great solutions we can find. This common ground that is so important.
Yeah.
You know, when we see somebody else who differs from us, if we take the time to step back, heal ourselves first, and then approach the situation with empathy, we can find the common ground where both of us find some solution.
You know, Stephen, it's interesting, too, that a lot of people find that, well, maybe until I'm in a better position, I can't do anything for others. And I often challenge that premise as well to say, you know, oftentimes we don't get in a better position till you help someone else get in a better position.
Yeah, you know, I think these are intertwined, and there's no right sequence of one versus the other. I think that both are important, and actually they both work synergistically, because the more you heal yourself, the more capable you are to be present for others, the more capable you are of healing yourself. It becomes
sure.
a virtuous cycle.
It is. It is a virtuous cycle for sure. And, you know, it's important to talk about here. In the past, we've had Chade Meng Tan. He's an executive at Google. He talked about search inside yourself, and that's about mindfulness. We've had Kat Tanzi, you know, with mindfulness. We've had others on mindfulness as well, and how important that is in our own grounding. A lot of people now listening probably thinking, gosh, talking a lot about the warm and fuzzies, and we do that a lot on this show, but why is compassion, forgiveness, vulnerability, and humility so profoundly important in great leadership?
Well, you know, I saw something play out just in this leadership struggle in real life. It was just really a wonderful miracle to see this happen. There was a very unfortunate situation where Dick Schultz, the founder and CEO of Best Buy, was forced to resign as chairman. He was a former CEO, now he was chairman, and he was forced to resign as chairman because he made a mistake, and the board forced him out. And he then went through this very antagonistic attempt to take over the company through a leveraged buyout. The act of healing and compassion was when Huberto Yoli, the new CEO, attempted to send an olive branch to Dick. You know, for several months, Dick rebuffed Huber's olive branch and refused to meet with him. But finally, the two met. And instead of beating his chest, saying, "I am the man now. I am the person who calls the shots. I am the CEO," he approached the meeting with compassion and respect for Dick, for his honor, you know, and dignity as a person, and respect for all that he had done. What he did was he handed Dick his resume. And even though he had been hired by the board 3 months earlier, he actually applied for the job of CEO to Dick.
Mm-hmm.
And Dick would later say that simple gesture was so powerful to him. Well, ultimately what happened is they found a common solution. Dick didn't take over the company through a leveraged buyout, but rather Huber found a way to tap into Dick's talents and knowledge of the situation and of the industry to bring him into the fold and to have him be aligned with the corporate objectives. And so that gesture of showing humility, respect, compassion, and empathy wound up benefiting not only Dick Schultz, not only Huberto Yoli, but the entire community. The Best Buy is a stronger company from it. The employers are in better situation from it. And ultimately, they're better able to confront their challenges. And boy, they do have big challenges. But the point is they're in a better position now that this wound has been healed, this conflict has been resolved, and Dick is back on the team.
Yeah, you know, it's a great transformation story, and there's so many of them out there, you know, for listeners who might be dealing with a conflict or a relationship right now that they would like to improve, to consider what you just shared as a way of applying and saying, hey, you know, what's my role in this? How could I honor that person or offer dignity in a way that might even change their behavior in ways we wouldn't even be able to imagine?
Exactly. Now, I must point out that there are some situations where anything you do can't change things.
Sure.
And I call this the Mission Impossible script. Mm-hmm. And the key is to recognize that. And, you know, if you recognize that you're in the Mission Impossible script, that changes your mindset. It really helps you realize that there's no way that you can achieve what maybe somebody has set an unrealistic goal for you or whatever, and you just have to go through it. And, you know, sometimes you might not have alternatives to leave the situation, or sometimes it might not even be in your best interest to leave, but rather to tough it out. And so mm-hmm. it's really important, to do whatever you can to do all of this healing, but recognize that sometimes things were not meant to be. And you need to realize the gifts from those struggles as well, because I believe that all struggles bring us gifts, and it's really a matter of how we use those gifts wisely.
Right, and not getting stuck in them.
Yeah.
You know, we have to take a quick break in just a moment, but before we do that, could you just tell us the story of Chuck Denny and what made him such a great CEO?
Chuck Denny, wow. Boy, talk about a guy who just glows. He told me of his compassion and empathy when he became the CEO of his company after he came from Honeywell, and all of the stories behind that. I actually don't go into them in the book, but the great thing about Chuck is his appreciation for the preciousness of life. And you know, when we celebrate how precious life is, we really see what a wonderful world we do live in. And, you know, Chuck really exemplifies that. He reminded me of stories of some of my early teachers who really brought out the best in me. When we celebrate and appreciate what's wonderful in life and how precious life is, boy, everything turns into a very different attitude. And we perform better. People are much more wanting to be around us. We're more effective as leaders, and we actually feel more fulfilled as human beings. Chuck Denny is such a great example of a person that just glows.
Yeah, I love that. That was a great way to summarize this segment, too, in terms of, you know, there's a lot of hope for all of us. Certainly shouldn't, you know, don't get stuck where we were, but use it to leverage it, to come out of it. And I think what you just mentioned there is a capstone to this, just cherishing and appreciating the goodness of life, and that how that impacts the lens and the way we talk and treat people is a way of living.
Indeed. Indeed.
Stephen, thank you. Let's take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to finish this whole conversation with some final pointers. We're going to find out how to get more information, Stephen, on you and on your book. For Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, this is Max Brown and Roy Saunderson reminding you to keep it real. We'll be right back.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Thank you for coming back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. We're going to finish off our conversation today with Stephen Schneider, our guest, and just learn some wonderful things. Last points on leadership and the art of struggle. You know, Stephen, as I've reflected on our conversation with you today, I think I've certainly relived my own experience when my business failed, and the fact that when you get so low, if you can learn from it, you can rise from it. What are some points that you would give to our listeners? If there was like one, two, three things that you would say, what do you need to do to prepare for that? Maybe how can we prevent from having to go so low, or do we have to go through that?
Well, you know, that's what the master practices in my book are all about. Really, there are 15 master practices, and if you engage in all those master practices, then you can navigate through almost anything. You know, I had a little problem with my book, during the later stages, and I actually put my own advice into practice. And you know, where I was off balance. You know, something happened, and it really threw me off balance. But then I reminded myself, hey, look, I wrote a book about struggle. why didn't I just do what I tell other people to do? And it uplifted me because I realized I was on the stumble, recover, and learn script. And in the stumble, recover, and learn script, it's all about recovering and repairing the damage very quickly mm-hmm. and learning from it. And then the point is that these practices that are in the book, they were derived by the stories that these leaders, these 93 leaders, told me about how they navigated through their struggle episodes. And so, I weave together a story of how struggle throws us off balance. And the first part of the book is about how to become more grounded and centered to regain our balance. And then once we regain our balance, we adapt to growth mindset, we tease apart and understand the tensions in our struggle, we begin to deal with them more effectively, we then can see new pathways emerge from this grounded and centeredness. And so the mastery practices in the book are really all about taking an individual through and processing the stages of struggle so that we begin to piece together in our own minds a story of how do we deal with this more effectively when it happens to us. And of course, we may be going through a challenging time ourselves. We may be preparing for a challenging new job opportunity, or want to embark on a new project that will challenge us. Or someone we know might be facing their challenges as well. This might be a good book to give to someone else. But the point is that there's practical, hands-on advice of to what to do, to how to best navigate through this challenge and adversity.
Well, it seems like to me, Stephen, that a lot of these leaders that you have been interviewed and studied are also voracious readers. Why is that?
Well, I think reading is very important. You know, what was interesting to me was the variety of what they read. Some stuck to classical leadership books. Some read biographies, and many read fiction. And you know, it was intriguing to me, since this whole leadership lens comes from studying leadership through the lens of literature. It really does point out what reading, and especially about what reading fiction can do for ourselves. There's again a lot of scientific research about that as well, because reading, just the process of reading, engages your mind in this mental model that brings compassion and empathy, these things that I was talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. So reading is really important. After you get done reading my book, go out and read a work of fiction, or go read a biography, because you'll see the work of fiction through a new light, and you'll see the biography through a new light through the lens that the book has.
Well, Stephen, you better tell our listeners, again, just reaffirm the title of your book and also how they can reach out and connect with you, please.
Yeah, the book is called Leadership and the Art of Struggle, How Great Leaders Grow Through Challenge and Adversity. The book is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all fine booksellers. And it's also, there's some more information about it on my website. My website is SnyderLeadership.com, S-N-Y-D-E-R, Leadership.com.
Wonderful.
Super.
Wonderful. Well, we certainly encourage our listeners to reach out and get a copy of that, and then also to visit your site and learn more. And Stephen, you know, before we conclude our show today, I'm just curious, is there one final thought or piece of advice that you would give our audience on leading and overcoming the struggle to get there? What would you tell them?
You're not alone.
Mm.
You're not alone. Everybody does this. And when we embrace struggle as an art to be mastered, instead of this negative that society teaches us, we realize that we can do this. We can get through it. We can be better leaders because this is the pathway to how we grow as leaders. It's the pathway for how we grow new skills. And you're just not alone. And if you really tap into that and embrace the struggle, then you can make the most of it.
Ah, love it. Love that concept of embracing the struggle. Stephen, it's been a delight to have you on the show today.
Indeed. It's been great talking with you guys.
Been a pleasure. Thank you, Stephen.
Well, for our wonderful listeners, we want you to tune in next week as Max and I continue our discussion on building relationships, inspiring greatness, and, of course, creating workplaces where people can thrive. Max and I welcome and, of course, encourage your comments and suggestions for other guests and topics for shows. Go to rideau.com/radio. That's rideau.com/radio. And speak directly with Max or myself. And to give us your feedback, please click on the prompt that tells us why you listen to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, and we'll send you a small token of our appreciation. We certainly look forward to hearing from you. And you can check out all of our shows at Rideau's Real Recognition Radio Library at Rideau.com. We thank you for listening to us. For more information about Rideau's Recognition Management Institute, you can also visit us at Rideau.com. Until next time, I'm Roy Sonnison along with Max Brown, reminding you to keep it real.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Sonnison and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.